Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. We continue this special edition of the Daily Drum, D.C. Election 2014. I'm Harold Fisher. We will be hearing next from Democratic candidate and D.C. Ward 4 Council Member Muriel Bowser. Again, we continue with Washington Times columnists Deborah Simmons and Kevin Martin with Project 21. Ms. Bowser, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Harold.
30 seconds. Why should we vote for you? Opening statement, please.
Well, I'll be a mayor that brings our city together. I've been very proud to represent Ward 4. I'm proud of the progress that the city has made recently. But I also know that too many of our residents have been left behind in that progress. We won a Democratic primary on April 1st because voters came out in large numbers and said they wanted a mayor they could trust, a mayor that was going to represent all of the interests of the District of Columbia and have a focus on how we get ready for a growing and a fast-growing future. And I'm proud to represent those values going into this November election.
First question. As you very well know, the primary was one of the lowest turnouts in D.C. history. We are seeing what appears to be a very lackadaisical attitude toward voting. What would you say to people that would get them to not only just come out to vote for Muriel Bowser, but to just come out and vote?
Well, that is the idea, to come out and vote for Muriel Bowser, and that's exactly what they did in large numbers on April the 1st.
Numbers of a small percentage of people.
Not for Bowser.
Yeah, but there were hundreds of thousands of voters here in the District of Columbia, and there were, less than 20,000 people who came out to vote? So again, what would you tell them?
No, we got 42,000 votes, Harold.
Okay,
well, it was more than 20,000 people
which is,
who
okay,
voted.
42,000, twice that much still. What would you tell people to get them out to vote?
Well,
why does it matter?
Oh, it absolutely matters. We know, especially in this city, that we have a strong tradition of voting. So many people have fought hard and died for the right to vote in our community. And passing on that legacy to young people, to new residents, is certainly important to how our city moves forward. Having more voices at the table makes for better policy. It makes for policies that are representative of the whole city. So I'm proud of the fact that we spent the last 19 months in every ward of the District of Columbia, knocking on doors, engaging voters to see exactly what's important to them. And they have said that they want a fresh start. They want to look at all of our agencies and making sure that we are getting this city ready for fast growth. How is that fast growth affecting people who have lived here for five decades or people who have lived here for just 5 minutes? And they want a mayor that's going to be able to attract the type of talent to deal with those challenges, be they transportation or education or environmental issues.
Ms. Bowser, I have a question myself, and we hear a lot of candidates talking about education K-12. Okay, I'm a businessman in Ward 8. One of the problems that I have is, when will the city locate a college, a wing of UDC, over in Ward 8 and Ward 7, so those people can have the same opportunity? Not everybody can get on the subway and ride to the UDC campus.
Well, Kevin, I have to invite you to P.R. Harris. But that's in Ward 8.
I understand that, but we don't hear it being advertised. Okay, we don't hear it out there. The people need to know these things. You finish at Blue, and it's like, okay, well, what do I do now?
Okay.
We'll let her go ahead because we don't have a lot of time.
I have to invite you to the UDC campus in Ward 8 where their workforce training program's happening every day and very successfully led by a dynamic young woman who is really a rock star at UDC. And so we do need to spread that footprint so more people know about it. One thing I say all the time, we're really good in D.C. of having great programs and keeping them a secret. And not only do we have to focus on workforce training, we know that adult literacy and adult learning is a big issue. We have successful models in our state programs at Roosevelt and Ballou, and we have to make sure we're encouraging more adult learners. But what you're talking about is jobs. And I have been frustrated in my 7 years on the council that we invest $100 million about every year in job training for jobs that don't exist or jobs that D.C. residents aren't getting. So I want to repurpose that money, how we spend it, to make sure that we're focused on working with our contractors impacting community. We're a $12 billion entity. A lot of people want to do business with the government. So what I want to say to them is let's partner together to employ our hardest to employ residents. We have a lot of residents with significant barriers to employment. So let's get our hardest to employ residents in those jobs. Let's expand our summer youth program, and let's make sure we're training D.C. residents for D.C. government jobs.
Yes, ma'am.
Muriel, I have to ask this question. There was a tax review commission that made a lot of recommendations. Are residents going to get an income tax break out of that work?
Yes.
What are we going to get?
The council, and I want to give Phil Mendeson a lot of credit for
that's
working.
That's okay, but we're talking to you right
Birdman,
now.
Birdman, how is that going to be done?
It's
already been done. We voted on it in our last budget to have a new income tax bracket. It used to be it would make our tax structure more progressive. It was the case that everybody, I think, below $125,000 was taxed at the same rate. We created another tax bracket, $40,000 to $60,000, I believe, that's taxed at a lower rate. So everybody in that new bracket will see a tax decrease.
Question about public safety. If you become mayor, are you going to keep Chief Kathy Lanier?
That is my absolute commitment. We have a police chief that is renowned across this country. The consistent leadership, in my view, at MPD over the last 8 years has really led to a department that residents trust more, where we've seen
violence. As long as they're armed.
As long as the police officers are armed.
There's chatter about disarming
the police.
Oh, no. Sure, I don't know about that. And we're going to make sure that we have a well-tooled and well-resourced police
and
department.
Armed.
And armed.
Tooled and resourced doesn't mean armed necessarily.
And armed.
Okay,
and with cameras and with cars and with Segways and with bicycles with good old foot power.
And one last one. Do you favor a reactive or a proactive police? Now, we've seen what happened in Ferguson with a reactive police force. What we need in the district is a proactive police force. And I've asked this of all the other candidates. Would you commit to police officers walking the beat in their communities once again, not showing up in police cars with lights flashing, but knowing who the community is, working in the community, whether it starts with officer-friendly, all the way through high school, all the way through the residence? Would you commit to that?
Absolutely. Now, unlike my opponents, I'm a ward council member. So I work hand-in-hand with neighborhoods and 20 great neighborhoods in Ward 4 keeping them safe. So I've had partnerships with our local commanders and with the police chief to get neighborhoods safer, where we've driven out open-air drug dealing, where we've driven down violent crime and homicide,
and we're going to continue
to drive down robbery to make our streets safer.
Now, let me ask you this, because the chief has often been criticized by the public and by my colleagues as well as being somewhat secretive when it comes to dealing with the public. If you decide to keep her, would you urge her to be, you know, more open as to the way the police department is operating, particularly, for example, as you're talking about, the gay and lesbian community or in other parts of the city?
Well, I've think that we can have the most open and transparent government in the history of the district. I want to use technology to invite the public in to make sure that the press has access to as much data that we can make available that keeps our neighborhood safe. So absolutely.
That's
let
a
me
qualification,
be clear.
Muriel.
Let me be clear.
We can make available. Can is a qualification.
Of course it is. That's not everything that can be made available. There's a lot of proprietary information, and I don't know about in the public safety arena. I think there's more. I know what the complaints are. I have some of them, too. As a ward council member, I want the information just as fast as possible without compromising the police's ability to investigate crime and get things done. But, Harold, I do want to be I don't want to equivocate at all. I think Chief Kathy Lanier is one of the best chiefs in this nation, and we need to keep her in D.C.
I only have about 2 minutes left. I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to make a final statement for 30 seconds. Please go right ahead.
Well, thank you for inviting us on. I think that this is a very high-stakes election for the future of the District of Columbia. I'm proud to be able to represent the values that so many Washingtonians care about, how we have educational equality across our city, how we grow our middle class, and we only do that with education and housing and jobs. But most importantly, we want to make sure that with the growth that this city is expected to have, 150,000 people over the next 25 years, we have to have a responsive government, a big thinking government, and very talented people to get the job done. And that's why I want to be the next mayor of the District of Columbia.
I understand. I do have an extra 2 minutes. So this is the question that I want to ask, because we've addressed this with everyone. Affordable housing in the district, Washington, D.C., now considered the most expensive place in America to live. What is your plan to deal with affordable housing?
We want to invest $100 million every single year in creating and preserving affordable housing units. In some years, we've done 40, some years 60, some years 80, but we need a consistent $100 million every year to get the job done. We want to focus on how we increase home ownership programs. We want to end family homelessness by 2018 and homelessness across our city by 2025. We do that by not only putting that money on the streets, but making sure that we have transitional housing available in all 8 wards across the city to finally be able to close D.C. General.
It's interesting. Each one of the candidates with certain questions, they've mentioned this one figure, $100 million.
It's a magic number.
You've said it, Mr. Catania. You said it, Ms. Schwartz. Where would you get the $100 million for affordable housing?
Sure. We have what is called the Housing Production Trust Fund. It takes a portion of our deed and recordation taxes. In some years, it's $40 million. Some years, it's $60 million. It fluctuates with home sales. And so we would take from our general funds, and we are a city that can afford this investment, and it's an investment that we have to make up any difference.
Okay. Mr. Catania says there's 40 units in Lincoln Heights that are habitable but are inhabited right now. Why is that?
I don't know about that number, but that's certainly something that the Housing Authority, if they have vacancies, then they should be moving families into them.
I need to take a break. Ms. Bowser, thank you very much for coming. I appreciate it. As we've said to the other candidates, good luck to you.
Thank you.
On November 4th, I'm sure we'll be talking to you again. We're going to take a break, after which we'll have a little discussion about the candidates. Stay with us on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. Of course, we are wrapping up part one of a special two-part edition of the Daily Drum, D.C. Election 2014. Now, in studio, we continue with our reporters panel, Washington Times columnist Deborah Simmons and Kevin Martin with Project 21. Let me first ask Deborah, your first impressions of the three candidates. Who do you think did well? Who do you think needed some work?
I think if I were using fresh ears and fresh eyes, I would certainly put David Catania at the top right there. He's been on the council a long time, so he mentioned the fact that 17 years forward till today, bam, 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 bam. This is what I did. Mm-hmm. This is what I plan to do. He laid out those as well. I don't think the Muriel did as well. I mean, I don't expect. Do you ever expect a candidate to say, "Well, I don't like the city much," or "I don't like the county much," or "I really don't care for America"? But what I want to do is
change things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I want you to tell me how you're going to change things. Mm-hmm. And let me make up my mind why I think that's a good idea. And this $100 million
term kept coming up.
They're misleading voters to think that for some reason that's a magic number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like somebody just grabbed a number out the air. I just kept wondering where it was coming from myself.
Exactly.
And it's like, okay, if you have this $100 million and you're talking about this $100 million, why haven't you spent $100 million yet?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what was very shocking was Mr. Catania talking about these
40 units in Lincoln Heights.
And 6 of them being used as office space. My God, we have children going to school in trailers around here. Why not put those people in a trailer, open those house units up, and let them be affordable housing for people?
I don't even understand why you need 6 offices in Lincoln Heights. But what is that about even?
And let's move on to deal with that specific issue. Mm-hmm. Is affordable housing the issue in the District of Columbia right now, that if the candidate can turn affordable housing around, it could literally turn Washington around? Or is there something else that piggybacks with that.
Those people who cannot afford housing in D.C., move to Prince George's County, Waldorf, places like that, they want to live in this city, but they can't afford to live in this city anymore. And then that city's like, well, here's our money. We got $100 million. They're always talking about it, but I'm watching people vote with their feet.
Right, exactly, which is what happens in a city like Washington all the time. Here's one of the biggest problems with housing here in the District of Columbia. We take emancipated pregnant girls, emancipated youth, and put them in their own housing. When you know at 17, 18, 20 years old, you don't know what the heck you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's
a cluster, you know, of the population. But even for those people,
instead of keeping them at home with their family, mm-hmm. if they're 40 units in Lincoln Heights, and they're 2, 3, and 4 bedroom units, there are families, perhaps an older father or uncle who can move in with the niece or the daughter and the kids, and they're all there together. Everybody don't have to have their own bedroom.
Mm-hmm. The kids, at any rate.
Let me grab this phone call. This gentleman's been waiting. Greg, calling from Northwest Washington. Greg, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hi,
doing
Greg.
Quickly. Go ahead.
So, public housing seems to be a soft, sensitive point, but one of my issues is public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it seems to me that the divine plan to create the streetcar system on H Street
mm-hmm.
seems to be somewhat of a debacle. It's apparently over budget. Behind schedule.
Yep.
Yes.
My question to the panelists, who do you think is best equipped to properly plan and set up an adequate public transportation system in D.C., like, for example, expanding the circulator system and things like that?
Expanding circulator? So you're strictly talking about public transportation.
Mm-hmm. Public transportation. Like
of any sort, whatever it happens to be.
I would think it would be Muriel Bowser, and I'll tell you why. She's a member of the Metro panel. And or Carol Schwartz, who also was working in the city, a leader in the city when we were devising, revising, and renovating the metro system. Now, having said all that, Ann Muriel has been really good. I've talked to Ward 4 folks. She makes sure that when the rail system, that is the streetcar system, changes, when Metro outgrows itself in certain, you know, whether it's the bus depot or whatever it is, she makes sure that she connects Metro people with neighbors and community so Metro doesn't come in and just put down its big footprint with a new garage or a new facility, and unlike what has happened under Mayor Gray, where he just let his administrators decide what they were going to do and how they were going to do it. And it makes me angry. I want to mention one last thing, Greg. This all started under Tony Williams. So really, we can't give credit to Adrian Fenty. We can't give no credit to Vince Gray, and probably cannot give big credit to whoever our next mayor will be, because they're merely picking up on things and pushing and supporting things that all started back under Tony Williams when he was mayor that everybody has amnesia about.
Okay, well, Greg, thank you so much for your phone call. I only have about 3 minutes left, and here's a question for both of you.
Sure.
Is it time for a white mayor? Is it time for a female mayor? And
again.
Does it, again, exactly. Mm-hmm. And if so, does it matter?
It's time for a competent mayor. Okay, a mayor who can look at Ward 1 as with the same duality that he looks at Ward 8, or he or she looks at Ward 8, and say, this is a part of the city. They are equally as important. I am going to lead. I am not going to allow my administrators to do this and that. And because one ward votes for me more than the other ward, I am going to focus my attention on the ward that did not vote for me as much, because I have to change some minds. We seem to forget these people serve us. We do not serve
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know what kind of mayor we need? An effective and efficient one.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who looks at the city's money as if it were their own,
yes.
and not some money that just happened to fall into a general fund.
$100 million.
$100 million, so we can put... And a mayor with vision. Tony to Williams lead this city forward. When he first ran for mayor, do you know what captivated him with a lot of voters? Because I was there. He said, I'm the man behind the curtain. I think outside the box.
There you go.
I want to thank both of you for coming in and participating in this. Certainly, we're going to find out what happens on November 4th. And coming up in 2 weeks, we will have more candidates, because these are not the only three that are running for mayor. So we are going to hear from them as well. Deborah Simmons, Kevin Martin, again, thank you so very much. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, October 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold T. Fisher, or Twitter at hfisherwhur. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. The Hang Suite is next on Sirius XM Channel 141. Good night.
As a small business owner, you don't deliver anything less than 100% to your customers. And at Verizon, we believe you shouldn't settle for less than 100% of the internet.